Welcome to episode 72 of the Golf Talk Podcast. We've completed four rounds of tournament golf, and we're tired. This is Eric Parzeski. Joining me, as always, Jeff Smith.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, we got a lot to talk about this week, so we're going to jump right in. First off, we're going to start with the women. They played in the Solheim Cup, which we didn't really preview last week because we had a lot to catch up on. But the Solheim Cup was played. The weather was absolutely dreadfully miserable. Sunday singles matches were actually delayed because they had to finish the foursome matches from the day before. All kinds of stuff was just a mess. But the Americans came out on top. This is only the second time the away team has won. Of course, they've only had 10 Solheim Cups, so
headline, maybe not news.
And the Americans are now up 7-3. They've won both of those that have gone the opposite way. So the Americans winning in Sweden this year. A lot of stars on the team. They win 16-12, really kind of closing it out. Nicole Castrelli sank the winning putt, the putt that clinched it, and then several groups after her also piled on some extra points. So a good win by the Americans. Did you get a chance to watch any? Or
no, I didn't, but it is a great win by the Americans, and you know, a real confidence booster for some of the gals that joined this team, and hopefully some of these gals will take that into their kind of into their individual performances throughout the year.
It was on at 2 a.m. here, so that means it was on 11 p.m. your time. You could have watched it and put yourself to sleep with the bad weather.
I sure could have.
It was Seattle weather. It was raining and super windy all week.
And it's starting to get that way, here. So I certainly would have felt right at home.
Well, we'll have a little bit more to say about the Solheim Cup a little bit later. But most people, I'm guessing, were watching stuff that wasn't on at 2 a.m. They were probably watching the Tour Championship. Tiger Woods, it turns out he didn't even need to play based on where Phil Mickelson and Steve Stricker and all the other people who had a chance to win finished. They all finished pretty far down the list. So his lead would have held up even if he hadn't picked up a club this week. But he did. He won. Woods says he's going to do something, he tends to do it.
Yeah. And he goes out there, and as you say, he didn't even have to play, but he just put on a performance that is really impressive. You know, almost sets himself up for the same kind of performance he closed out the year with last year. You know, the question is he going to come back next golf season and just burn people up?
In his last 22 starts on the PGA Tour, he's won 13 times, including three majors. The number of people that have not won 13 times, let alone three majors, it's a long list. And these are guys with 20 years on the PGA Tour. And Tiger Woods has done it in his last 22 starts.
Wow.
What springs to mind for me is Tiger Woods, when his mind is really set on something. When's the last time he hasn't won? You know, I can think of the Masters the year his dad died because he really wanted to win that one for his dad. And I can think of, you know, what else? I'm sure he, you know what I mean? I mean, he wanted to win the FedEx Cup. He stated it anytime he voices a goal. And obviously his goals are to win the majors and things like that. So, you know, I'm kind of, those are not really special circumstances. But when was the last time under some kind of special circumstance where Tiger said, I want to win, or I'm determined to win, or something, that he didn't accomplish it, besides maybe that Masters? Can you think of any?
Well, I mean, obviously you're kind of, you know, you're pushing that idea to an extreme. I mean, he wants to win every time he goes out, and obviously he doesn't do that. But this to me is a confluence of some swing changes that he's made and a really big event. I mean, obviously he's captured history in a bottle again by winning a brand new event, this new playoff series. And, you know, his swing changes really come together to, I don't know, I mean, he just decides has made a statement here again.
He ends up with 123,033 points. I think this was his seventh win of the year, his 61st win. And it's funny, during the trophy presentation, he was presented with the Tour Championship trophy, held that for a little while, and then set it back down so Tim Fincham could give him the FedEx Cup. And then he kind of snuck over and put the little club down that broke off of the golf run, the trophy for the Tour Championship. So the FedEx Cup has never been kissed, and Tim Fincham made a bad joke or something about that, but the Tour Championship trophy has already been broken.
Whoops.
He not only broke records at the Tour Championship, he broke the trophy. But his last several rounds, from the second round in Boston through to the final round at the Tour Championship, 64, 67, 67, 67, 67, 65, 63, 64, 63, 64, 66. I know some golfers that would be happy to take that as their nine-hole scores.
No kidding. And, I mean, to see him shoot, you know, to finish 22 under last weekend and then to come out and better it by one this weekend, I mean, here's a guy, again, whose swing has come together. You know, we look at Tiger Woods right at the middle of the year. Obviously, he came off of the previous previous season and reeled off seven in a row. And then kind of, you know, we didn't see him win. You know, he missed out on
close to two majors, 12th.
Yeah, missed out on the Masters and, you know, just didn't play the kind of golf that we expected him to play after reeling off that many victories. But right. Man, he is still as strong as ever, whatever you want to say about him.
It was a forum topic where they asked if Phil was in Tiger's league at all. And I'm sorry, but come on.
Hey,
Phil 13 wins and 22 starts, three majors. That's Phil Mickelson's entire career.
Sure,
except for some of the win total. But three majors?
No, Phil is not in Tiger's league. I mean, Phil is a great player, and I think Phil has established himself as an even better player than he was. I mean, his game has improved, his driving has improved, he's getting better. But no, not in Tiger's league, and Tiger sort of makes that statement yet again.
Yeah, as they say, in his dreams. We'll be right back after this.
I'm working on shortening my swing.
Holding up more trophies.
Making the next Ryder Cup team.
Posting more low numbers.
Making everything I look at.
Getting the club more in line at the top.
Drawing the ball.
Working on my pivot.
Being more consistent.
More wins.
More wins.
More wins.
More wins.
More majors.
Just trying to get better.
Working on beating this guy.
Working on a whole lot of things.
Even the world's best want to be better. That's why there's the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
The colorful Woody Austin, in dress and in speech, is mouthing off again at Tiger Woods. And on Saturday, he throws up a one-under.
Tiger Woods only beat him by five shots that day.
Yeah, of course, Woody, I'm sure, played better than Tiger that day, too. So right. He's barking at Tiger, saying that he's essentially as beatable as ever.
Yeah. We just talked about this, too. 22 starts, 13 wins. It's something like 59%. And three majors. Woody, you know, what's he got? Three, four wins his whole career?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So, buddy, I'm all for having confidence, you know? But these people, the Rory Sabatinis, the Woody Austins of the world, just get your facts right. Like, if you want to say, hey, I feel like if I'm playing really well, I have a chance to beat him. Because you know what? Any given Sunday, fine, so be it. But don't say you're better than him. Come on. You're not. If you think you're better than him, you have never been on your game. Ever. Ever. Right. Never.
And so we've got a few people here feeling frisky. Sabatini, Austin, of course, the famous Stephen Ames. Woody may have wanted a piece of Woods, and he got it. So
upside the chin.
Yeah, exactly. And with all this talk, you know, we saw Woody Austin with the putt that wasn't a putt, and so
the putt not heard around the world.
Yeah, the putt not heard around the world. Eric, what's your take on that? You had some commentary on the forum topic.
There were two things as I saw it, and the video is linked in our forum topic, so check our show notes out and that you can see the video if you're not sure what we're talking about. There were two ways. Basically, Woody Austin set the putter down behind the ball and then tapped it in. Now, there were two ways. Some people thought that his first attempt, like when he set the putter down, was actually an attempt, a stroke, so he should have counted it, making a bogey six, but Woody denied that and said, no, he was just setting the club behind the ball. Two things, the way I see it. Number one, he was trying to set the club behind the ball, down behind the ball, the putter down behind the ball, and just really got very close. Like, maybe he meant to set it down 3 inches behind the ball, but he kind of set it down an eighth of an inch behind the ball.
Yeah.
Maybe he made a mistake and just barely got away with it by not touching the ball at all. The other way would be, we've all seen where you just kind of set your putter down behind the ball and try almost like chop down on the back half of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the ball will go like 2 feet and he only had an 8-inch putter, whatever it was. And he stubbed it, like he hit it fat, basically, which would count as a stroke because your intent then is to hit the ball. And then he quickly realized, and then, you know, pushed forward and shoved it in the hole, basically. So I think it was one of those two things. And the video, the announcers, they replayed it several times. They asked Woody what he got. He said five, which under the rules of golf is pretty much all, that's as far as it goes, really. Unless the ball moved, and, you know, they kept showing their video replays, which I thought was dumb. If the ball is moved, if it moves, the video replay is very valid, because obviously then there's a problem. If it doesn't move, all you can go on is his word. And so showing the video over and over and over again is kind of pointless.
Well, it's a subjective, completely subjective decision. For any of us, it's not a decision that anybody could make, none of the rules officials or anyone. No one but Woody could make it. I looked at the little clip, and he's walking into the ball, and he's essentially making a stroke, or what looks like a stroke, as he's walking. It's almost like he's continued, and he was ticked, he was mad. mad that he angry that he missed the putt. To me, it looked like, and if I mean, I was going to make
a stroke decision, is a stroke is defined as, you know, an attempt to hit the ball, basically a forward stroke and then an attempt to hit the ball. So it all boils down to he made a forward stroke, whether or not he was actually attempting to hit the ball, because he didn't hit the ball.
No, he didn't. And to me, it looked like
if his intent was to hit the ball with that motion, then it would be a stroke. So you think he intended? So you think Woody Austin is a liar?
You know what? It looked to me like he was walking into it and he was going to try to make. Now, everybody's going to have their opinion on it. I've got to take his word for it. I mean, that's all I can do. I'm not going to sit here, even though it sounds like I'm saying Woody's a liar. He is. He's not a liar.
I'm going to excerpt that. Woody is a liar. You said it. I'm just going to take it out of context, and that'll be that.
Okay, and so 25 people in our poll said that Woody is a liar, and 17, which is 40% of the folks, said no, he didn't intend to do that. And so more people than not are siding with your excerpt there, saying that he is a liar.
All right, well, you decide. Check out the video on our show notes. We'll link to the forum thread where we discuss it and link to the video, and vote in the poll. See what you think. Tell us what you think. We'll be right back.
Ones, twos, threes, and fours.
But mostly ones.
I never start with a two.
Ones and threes.
I never play higher than a four.
Low numbers.
I like ones.
Anything but ones.
Fours in the final round.
He's ones on Thursdays.
Twos on Fridays.
Threes on Saturdays.
And fours on Sundays.
Five, six, seven, or eight.
Whatever my caddy hands me.
Threes.
Anything but a three.
Nines.
Any number.
Any number. Any number.
As long as it's Titleist.
Whatever the number, more players trust Titleist than all other golf balls combined.
Welcome back. This is our Beating Balls segment. Some quick little stories here we hope to patch through pretty quick. The first one is a Golf Channel blunder, and that's what I would call it. I was watching online while Tiger Woods was shooting a front nine 28 at the Tour Championship. I was watching online waiting for coverage to pick up. Coverage would have picked up around, I think, the 7th or 8th hole, so I was letting it get a little ahead. Tiger Woods finished his 9th hole. I went down, I turned on the Golf Channel, I rewound, I started watching the coverage, and it says Tiger Woods on the 4th hole or something. So I'm like, oh, this is great, I got to watch extra or something, you know. Turns out that was the previous round that he was finishing up early. They were showing it on tape delay. And then, I mean, Tiger Woods is in the process of shooting, basically, you know, if he does the same on the back nine, a 56. And we're seeing coverage from a round ago. His score was posted, and they had Tiger Woods teeing off on the 2nd hole in that round. Hours after his score has been posted, he finally finishes on the Golf Channel. But, you know, if you're going to have a Golf Channel, show the darn golf that's live.
Yeah, this is a major blunder, because this is a big event. I mean, one thing if it's, the BC Open or, you know, some event where you don't have a whole lot of big names. This is the last major event of the year. It's not a major, but it's a huge event. The FedEx Cup major is wrapping up. And I mean, I would think if I was Tim Finchem, I'd be ticked. You know, you gotta be having better coverage than this. And people,
no, because everyone said, oh my gosh, Tiger, I gotta go watch. Wait, what's this? Hey, that's from like 4 hours ago. Click off.
Yeah, and there's no way that I could see the PGA Tour being happy about this, because they've lost a bunch of viewers in the process, and sponsors are ticked. This is a big blunder, and I think this is the kind of thing the Golf Channel has to guard itself against and become kind of professional in this whole coverage arena.
It's funny that they can show the Solheim Cup at 2 a.m. just to show it live, and yet when Tiger plays and is in the process of shooting a 63 with a front nine 28, they show tape delay coverage of his earlier round. Whatever.
Yeah, I hope they're listening to us right now.
Hello, Brian Hewitt. Brian Hewitt, the choking dog. No, wait, that's the term that Dottie Pepper used when she thought she was off air to describe the U.S. Solheim Cup team. They went to commercial, and before the mics could cut out, she said, choking freaking dogs on the air, thinking they'd gone to commercial. Word made its way back to Sweden, where the U.S. players heard about it. American captain Betsy King said, I'm too involved with the Solheim Cup to worry about it. Afterwards, I'd be happy to comment.
Yeah, what it indicates to me is Dottie Pepper really was pulling for the Americans. She's ticked. She wants them to, you know, to finish this off. Distance themselves from the European team, and so to me, it's, when you look at it, I think about this from her perspective, it's a positive comment. She's pulling for the Americans. She wants them to play well, and someone misses a short putt and she's ticked, and that's why she says it. Obviously, yeah, it's not something that she should have said on television.
Betsy King later responded that these comments were somewhat bad. She said, hey, there's a reason Dottie's an analyst. It's probably because she can't play anymore. And then it was something like that. And then she also said, oh, wait, I'm getting myself into trouble. Let's put it this way. The longer it's been since you've played, the better the player you were.
Oh.
So I'm going to put Betsy King in the not a Dottie fan.
don't think so. Cat fight.
There's just no good segue to this, so whatever. Zach Johnson flirts with a 59, shoots 60. This was a big story on Saturday. It moved him way up in the standings, Tour Championship, but he came to the 16th hole needing two birdies in the last three holes. He puts it to 10 feet below the hole, and then it hits a 9-foot putt. I was like, no! And then 17, he drives in the fairway bunker, hits a great shot out of the fairway bunker to 10 feet, maybe less, buries that putt. So he comes to the 18th hole, par 3, 223 yards or something it is, needing a birdie to shoot 59, hits it in the right bunker, his bunker shot misses by 8 inches a foot, something like that. He basically taps in for a 60.
Yeah, he kept himself before the golfing public. You know, here's a guy who won the Masters, and now he flirts with a 59.
He does well in Georgia.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, exactly. We had this comment last time. He does play well in Georgia, yes.
Jeff Ogilvie set the course record, a 62, a couple hours earlier. Short-lived. He didn't even start engraving his name on the course record plaque, because along comes Zach Johnson, a couple groups behind him, and shoots 60. So, sorry, Jeff.
Yeah, exactly. Out of luck.
That's not even the lowest round shot recently. A Colorado assistant pro got a record here. He shoots a 15 under 56 at he's the assistant pro at Cattails Golf Club in Alamoso, Colorado. He shot a 56. He had two eagles on the front nine, started number 10 with an eagle, 5 birdies on the front. He shot 26 on the front nine.
Lips out a 25 foot eagle, which would have been for a 55 that was on 18. So he had a round going.
And he missed a 4-inch putt or a 4-foot putt earlier in the round. So here's the thing, though. He's an assistant pro, so he's pretty good. He was playing from the blue tees, which at this course measures 6,000 yards. And he's in Colorado, so I'm going to guess that the ball flies a little farther. So I don't know. I kind of wonder what the par... Well, 1,500. Par 71, obviously. So it's a par 71 that measures 6,000 yards in Colorado. I don't know. That sounds... I wonder how many 280-yard par 4s they have.
6,000 yards, though. I mean, it's... Obviously, this isn't...
Well, it's not a pitch and putt, but it's 6,000 yards, you know?
Yeah, it's a little shorter.
In Colorado. It's a little shorter.
It's a little shorter, but boy, yeah, I'd be impressed with anybody who shoots a 56 anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, most people, a lot of scratch golfers should go to a par 54 pitch and putt and, you know, struggle to shoot 56, so, on a par 54, so, hey, kudos to him, man. Next story here, we have a little talk about this year we have 2 weeks, we have 1 week between padding Tour Championship and the President's Cup. It's this week right now. There's no golf tournament of any terrible importance this weekend. But next week is the President's Cup. Next year, players will play the Tour Championship and then immediately the Ryder Cup.
I can't see for the life of me how any of these guys who are calling for a shorter season and more time off and so on are going to be able to really have much fun at all when it comes around to the Ryder Cup, especially an event that everyone wants to be up on so much. It's a highly anticipated event, and the Americans, of course, want to capture it back, so it's a tough place for them.
And any Europeans that are, you know, in the top 30 in our tour on the FedEx Cup list could be there. I mean, we could have a Tour Championship next year with 18 players, because Tiger Woods has already won the first one. I mean, if I were Tiger Woods, I'd say this: hey, I won the first one. I've shown that I can do it, even skipping an event. Next year, maybe I'll play two of the three events. Maybe I'll try to win. And, you know, I'm going to say, you know what, because I value the Ryder Cup so much, I'm going to skip the Tour Championship so that I can properly prepare for the Ryder Cup, which is more important to me than something I've already won.
I think this is highly likely for a lot of guys. Yeah. You know, Phil Mickelson.
And I'm not going to blame him. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to give him a pass. If they were to take the week off and prepare for the Ryder Cup, they have my complete support in that. So,
and why
wouldn't
they? I
don't care who it is. Phil, I mean, everybody, do it.
History's on their side. I mean, what were the four majors are important. And the Ryder Cup, I mean, those are events that they're going to want to play. Obviously, you know, people show up to the Tour Championship.
Heck, I hope all the European team members play in the Tour Championship and all the Americans take the week off.
Well, I doubt that'll happen. But.
That'd be great, though. We might get close. We might get within 4 points then of winning.
Yeah, are we going to have a sand trap, some kind of a push to see the European players play?
Yeah, that's right. We'll get on them for not playing, but we'll give all the Americans a pass.
All right, fair enough.
John Huggan talks about, this is transitioning here into two amateur stories. John Huggan covered the Walker Cup matches, and he talked about Colton Nost, basically what a jerk he was.
Yeah,
he calls him an arrogant and boorish so-and-so. He said his reaction to not winning his singles match on the second day when his opponent Daniel Willett held a 20-foot putt on the final green to clinch at least half a point was disappointing. After treating Willett to one of those limp-wristed, no-eye-contact handshakes one always hates to see at the end of any match, Nost strutted around the putting surface for an unhealthy amount of time, shaking his head and staring up at the heavens. The implication was clear. How dare this obviously less gifted chopper make such an outrageous putt and deprive me of my preordained victory? And on and on and on. So John Hogan, not a fan of Colt Nost.
Well, you know, I mean, this is that was his the first time he'd seen Nost play. And of course, you want a good handshake. You want to show appreciation. It's all about sportsmanship. We all know that in golf. Unfortunately, we don't see that a whole lot anymore in other sports. But this is a sport where we want to see sportsmanship and to honor the person who has beat you.
Or tied you.
Yeah. And so, yeah. I mean, he's got a point. The guy should grow up, but of course he'll join a bunch of attitudes on the PGA Tour should he make it.
Well, that's the next story. Colt Nost has decided, basically, he's not saying exactly, but pretty much everything you read right now says he's going to turn pro. He's going to announce it later this week. That means he's going to give up the invitation to the Masters and as well as the right to play in the British Open and U.S. Open.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. We talked about this last time, last week. Call me a little bit of a sentimentalist, but I think that our amateurs should play and should relish that time that they have as amateurs. It goes way, way back. You know, we obviously think of Bobby Jones, but I think more should be made of these great amateur competitions and an amateur career, even if someone should so choose. Obviously, the money is such that, you know, most people kind of skip that, but there's good precedent in golf to see guys play and to enjoy an invitation like the Masters as an amateur.
This is what I don't get. Like we said before, there's absolutely no guarantee he's going to make it back to the Masters, the U.S. Open or the British Open. You know, you could say what you will. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. I'm sure he's talented. Obviously, he won the U.S. Amateur and the U.S. Public Links, fine. But there's no guarantee. And he has a guaranteed right to go there, basically, to those three majors right now.
Yep.
Aside from Q School, there's not a single professional major between now and the Masters. You know, our opinion has always been, hey, at least play the Masters. That's a special tournament for amateurs. There's not a big tournament except for Q School between now and then. And he could go the way of Ryan Moore and all those others who got sponsor exemptions after playing in the Masters. If he's as good as he is, and he'll be still the reigning U.S. Amateur champion, the U.S. whatever, Public Links champion and all that, after the Masters, he'll get his sponsor invitations. He'll have a chance to win some money. He can turn pro after that. Go that route, I would say.
Plenty of time. He's got plenty of time to do it.
You're young, playing the Masters as an amateur. It's supposed to be a once-in-a-lifetime thing that you're going to give up the right to for the rest of your lifetime if you turn pro.
It'd be pretty easy to say that gaining experience is more important than having the title pro. I mean, you know, to get there and to play at the Masters early, I think would be more important than trying to qualify for it in 5 or 6 or 8 years. You know, then you know, hey, I've been here. Then once you make it as a professional, you've had the experience, you've been there once before, and you take some of the jitters out.
Well, his mind's made up, apparently, so good luck to him, but...
Bonehead.
And what is he, a boorish sod of a...
So-and-so.
An arrogant and boorish so-and-so. So, that about concludes episode 72. I hope we shot 63 or 60 or something, like Zach Johnson, or maybe we shot 56, Jeff.
Let's not go there.
All right. Well, that's episode 72 of the Golf Talk Podcast. Check our show notes out for links, especially the Woody Did He Putt or Did He Not thread in our show notes every Wednesday on the site. Just click on the podcast link. There's a few of them on the site. Check our forums out at thesandtrap.com/forum. Until then, keep it in the short grass and make sure you tap in your putts without actually Woody.
Pre-shot routine, people.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.